Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel's
feeding it! Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
That's the Jaws theme, Rusty. Okay. Here we come again. Do you remember Jaws, Rusty? You remember that was my...
Oh, God.
My first date at a drive-in with a chick. And I still went home. Over. Okay. It was no good, man. But
she was hanging on to the spare tire instead of you.
She was the one who suggested if we're going to sneak into the driveway that I go in the trunk, and she drove the car in, and then she left me in the trunk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember
picked up somebody.
Remember the talk of that movie, Russ? The Jaws, like how scary it was supposed to be. Have you seen it lately? How stupid it was.
Oh my God.
The big fish.
Oh God. It scared the living crap out of me. I've never been the same in the ocean since.
You know what? Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables with all the hot topics, shark attacks. I went to Hawaii, Rusty. You're listening to The Suspendables, by the way. I went to Hawaii a few years ago. In fact, I ran into, just by chance, the G-Man was there. Gretz. Yeah. We had a great time. We hung out for 5 days. I swam in the ocean. Loved it. It was on the big island on Kona. And Mauna Kea was, if you've been to Hawaii, that's a big resort there. And we were hanging out down there. And I was swimming every day. Okay. Swimming every day. Loved it. But I'm a little twitchy, Rusty, in the ocean when I see these big turtles. When I rub up against some coral or like one of these gross weeds wraps around my waist, I freak out. Okay. I can't handle it. Anyway, I go flying out of the water. I get back home and a month later, I'm looking at someone got attacked by a shark in Kona on the big island at Mauna Kea. Okay, Jesus, I bring up my hives. How you been, Rusty? How was the week, man? Lots happening. Your son-in-law future, that kicked off tough loss for many, the Vikings, Eric Kendricks, of course, is your son-in-law. But it's underway big in the States, Rusty, obviously the NFL.
I watched a little bit of Eric's game, but then I, was invited to Andrew Whitworth, number 77, and I, our buddies, plays for the Rams. And he wanted me, a bunch of his friends, to see his last first game. So he's got a box. We do the tailgate. It was awesome. And to see everybody out there having a great time, obviously tailgating's not as big a deal, isn't a deal in hockey, but it was just phenomenal to see all these people. And there wasn't an empty seat that I could see in the entire stadium. And the Sophie Stadium is just beautiful. So all good, fun. They won. Stafford's the real deal.
Yeah. I saw you putting up pictures. You always do that to me, right? I'm like lying around in my underwear on my smelly couch with a remote with no one around. It's dark. I got the curtains drawn. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll watch. I don't know, the US Open, roll over, lie on my other side. Cause the other one, I got bed sores from the one side. I'm watching, there's no golf. And then bing, my phone will go off, right? And it's like Russ at fucking Mardi Gras. Woo, Jimmy, look what I got going on here. All right. Oh, yeah, my buddy with the Rams. I'm sitting in the player's box. Okay, we're getting annihilated. There's people around. It's the best, you know. Tailgating, Rusty, you're right. It's not big in Canada, the CFL games. I went to my first tailgating party in Buffalo. And it wasn't a football game. It was at Buffalo Stadium. But it was the second outdoor hockey game. They played it there. And I got hired to go down and do a cool shit on the every time there was a break in play, they would throw it to me in the stand. There were 70,000 people there.
Wow.
And, you know, I do shit on the Jumbotron. However, it was my first experience with tailgating, massive parking lot across the street. And I said, this is crazy, man. And we were shooting a bunch of video. So they got it highly organized, Russ. I'll tell you what the biggest secret is to these great parties that nothing really bad happens at them. You go to a CFL right. game, okay? People are getting busted. They're drinking where they shouldn't be. They're getting all sorts of trouble. But that thing, it was like highly organized. There's like three rows of tailgating. And the first row is sort of the family section, right? Where people are having mm-hmm. quiet barbecues with their kids and they're throwing a little Frisbee around. You know, the second row, it's up a notch. Okay. It's up yeah. a notch. There's no kids, but it's a bunch of couples sitting around cooking steaks. Okay. The third row for sure. Okay. Is out of control. Okay. It's like people are nude, not quite, but they're dancing yeah. on their Vans. They're doing moshing. I went into a mosh pit there and stuff like that. But you know what, Rusty? They don't hassle them. There's no cops yeah, yeah. around.
There's none.
Yeah. They let them drink. There's no one bothered as long as you stay in your area. And the other cool thing is, which is really smart, is they allow you to walk into the stadium with your booze.
Right.
Okay. So they're not
until you get to the front door.
Well, even that, I think they might say that's fine. You just got to be like, I saw people going in a little cup of beer and they're like, okay, go ahead. You know, you know, Vegas, you can walk around with booze all day long. You can have those fucking beer hats on and you're doing everything. So it was like this really controlled thing.
Yeah.
You know, and but it's huge down there, Rusty, right? Like the.
Oh, it is massive. It was unbelievable. So Melissa Whitworth and Matthew Stafford's wife put on the tailgate, invited their friends. But what was really cool, they brought in a busload of Marines. These young kids all got off this bus. And the food was gone in 5 minutes. It was awesome. They were so, you know, kids, oh, barbecue, oh, sandwiches. And didn't see them touch any booze, but they were hammering the food, which was fun to see young kids.
Right.
The big appetite.
Big game in Canada. I love telling this story, Rusty. A big game in Canada for colleges. Carleton University is in Ottawa. And of course, Ottawa U is in Ottawa. And they have a game every year. It's kind of our equivalent of, you know, I don't know, a Big Ten conference game or something. It's called the Panda Bowl, and they play each other once a year. And it's a big party. We stay up all night back then, big breakfast party. And then we got to get into the stadium. We're all hammered. We got to get in and we got to sneak in a bunch of booze, okay? So yeah. I like you, Rusty, okay? If I was going to organize something where we needed to run the gauntlet, I would go, get Russ Courtnell here. Get Rusty. We'll know how to do this. Okay. He will know how to do this. So what we did, Rusty, is we packed scotch, okay, in freezer lock bags. Okay. And we zipped them up. And I said, here's the plan, you guys. Just follow my lead. So this is right when you weren't, you know, this was the big deal that they're going to frisk you at the front when they had security. So there's 10 of us. And we body pack the freezer lock bags of scotch because they kind of slightly frisk you. And all it's going to feel like is a fat stomach. Okay.
Right.
So what, even to double up on it, to make sure I'm going to go in first, you guys be right behind me. The guy is going to bust me for sure. I got the jean jacket with the Mickey pocket. Okay.
Yeah.
And I put a Mickey in there knowing he's going to find it. Okay. And of course,
right.
but Russ, empty the scotch first and make it apple juice. Okay. I'm not racing 13 ounces of scotch. So I have it. Okay. So I go, here's what's going to happen, boys. He's going to bust me and I'm going to tell him, okay, well, I'll take you to the next date. The exact thing, you're behind me. Hey, how are you? The guy go, oh, hang on. Got to check. And he's like over the moons, Rusty, that he's busted me for this
mission. Yeah.
So as he pulls it out, here's the next one. Okay. I go, oh man, come on. He goes, no, hey, no booze. Nice try, sucker. Okay. And I'm saying, look at my buddies here. This is all we have is the Mickey.
Oh,
so
God.
It's like a good magic trick, Russ. It's like distraction. Yeah. Give me a break, pal. It's 13 ounces. There's 10 of us. We all want to have one shot. Sorry about that, pal. Sorry, boys. It's a dry afternoon. Go ahead. Okay. sorry about your nine guy. Your buddy screwed it up for you. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And of course they all run by. So now we all get in there. Okay. Now yeah. we got bottles of booze, Rusty. Okay. But they're in freezer lock bags. So we're going to figure out how we're going to pour it out of that. We get in there, Russ. We set them down underneath the chairs. Just lay them down underneath your seat there. And yeah. one of our buddies is late and he's the play started and he's running up to our seats. And then he's, you know, checks into our aisle and starts to run across to get his seat, Russ, and steps on every freaking bag of the scotch. So we're out anyway. So that was my tailgate. But I ran into my mother because she came to watch. My brother was on the team. And I ran into my mother, who was there with my dad. She had, back in those days, you wore fur coats. You know, my mother had a big raccoon coat on. And I come by it honestly, Rusty. And I said, hey, Mom, how are you? And she was sitting there with a blanket, you know, just folded over her arms, waiting for my dad who had parked the car. And I said, hey, Mom, do you want a little booze? Right? Yeah. And my mother looks at me and just lifts up the blanket as she's got the 40-ouncer of vodka. She goes, no, we're fine. Yeah. God bless my mother. On the show today, Rusty, lots of stuff to talk about. We do want to, this week, it's the 20-year anniversary of 9/11. Of course, I want to talk to you, Russ, about, you know, do you remember where you were, of course, and how well they recognize it all day yesterday in sports. It was incredible, you know, it's just a ripping memory, you know, it's just a searing memory.
Yeah, terrible. Early,
and it's our generation's D-Day, you know, but we want to talk about that. Also, the Canadian tennis, Russ, was at the forefront, man.
Unreal.
The U.S. Open, unreal.
Yeah, we're
going to talk about that. Speaking of tennis, Naomi Osaka, who's one of the greatest players in the world, she came out at the French Open and said, I'm not doing interviews anymore. We touched on this a little bit. And what she said was, I can't handle it. I can't handle the pressure. It's making me anxious and I'm not doing them. And it sets me off. And a lot of people were sort of like, whatever, it's part of the deal, relax. But this is looking like it's real. And we need to talk to you about that, what athletes are required to do, you know, post game. And we want to find out what your thoughts are on that. Being a kid of an athlete, a big article came out this week that I read about Kobe Bryant's daughter. You have a remarkable career under your belt, Rusty. You got remarkable children. You know, being an athlete like you were, Russ, for so long, you've always said it's a bit of a touchy thing to try and handle this with a family because it's not normal. It's not normal because you've said it's kind of a selfish career and they got to buy in. Otherwise it becomes very difficult for you. So I want to ask you about that. Also, Rusty, big week for us. Okay. You and I love the show. We love doing this podcast. We've done over 100 shows. Our numbers are really good. Okay. They're really good. And now's the time we want to turn this into thousands and thousands and thousands of followers. Okay. We kind of flattened out a little bit. Okay. We got really positive numbers, but they don't dip anymore, which is really good. If you're doing podcasts, folks, as long as you're not losing followers, you're good. But we want to take it to the next level. So I started a few months ago trying to convince, Reg, okay, our guy, kind of our boss on the show, that we got to get a digital marketing company on board. And every time I tell someone, I brag about you and I, Rusty, about doing a podcast, 100% of the people, Russ, eventually ask, how do you make money doing a podcast? You've probably gone through it too. How does it work? Why are you doing it? How do you get people to listen? How do you grow it? On and on and on, right? So,
well, first we'd have to get you to stop fucking talking so we'd have some time to place an ad. Holy shit.
It's so hurtful.
Are you back on the white stuff?
Jesus, maybe.
I could have had a freaking nap here.
Powdered beer. No. Do you want me to pretend I'm on the white stuff? Do you want to see how that would go?
No, I've seen it.
Okay. What was the giveaway? Jim, did you fall into a snowbank? Rusty said, go wipe that shit off your face. You know? Those are the days. Anyway, we have engaged the services of a digital marketing company. And I thought what might be interesting is, so it's kind of a relaunch of the show. And given the fact everyone wants to, you know, find out about podcasts and how do you do it and how do you grow it, I thought we would bring on our Elite Digital Marketing is the company that the services that we're going to use, and that listeners can, we're going to bring them inside. We're going to make this transparent with our goal of increasing listenership over the next while with the services of this company. And Eddie Ackel, okay, is the, okay, Russ, this guy has done more, okay, than, you know how accomplished your friends are, okay?
Yeah.
And the shit that they've done, and you, okay? This guy's done five times as much as you and I have, and he's 25 years old, okay? So we want to welcome Eddie. How are you, Eddie? You okay or what? He was nervous. Eddie phoned me, goes, Jim, don't kill me on this thing, okay? I said, don't you worry about me. Russ will be the one that'll take you down. Welcome to the show, Eddie. How are you?
Thank you so much for having me, gentlemen. I'm doing fabulous.
Oh, good. We got called gentlemen there, Rusty.
That's nice. I know. Wow. That's a first.
Yeah. So take us through it, Eddie. So when you totally convinced me, you and I met, and I phoned Rusty. I said, Rusty, this guy is the fucking nuts. He's the nuts on this thing, and this is what we need. So talk to us about podcasting for a second, Eddie. And you've said to me before, you guys are missing some stuff. It's all great, but here's what you're going to have to do if you want to grow this thing. So walk us through that a little bit, Eddie. What you, when you look at the suspendables, when you did look at it, and what your thoughts were about you wanting to get your hands on it, as you said, Jimmy.
Yeah, very good question. You know what? When I first heard of the suspendables, you and my business partner, Drew, were having a talk downstairs, and I heard a hockey podcast, and of course, grew up playing the sports. Love the sport. And first thing I did after, you know, a little conversation me and you had on what you guys are doing extremely well on, and, you know, what can use a little bit of work as well, mm-hmm. is I went and listened to one of your shows. And of course, the first show I listened to was the one, of course, with Wayne Gretzky. And I was like, oh, my God, these guys, you know, these guys have Gretzky on the pod. And first thing I do with, you know, any new client is I learn what they're currently doing for marketing and where their opportunity is. And, you know, you guys being an online podcast, you guys don't have a brick and mortar location.
Right.
So your guys' online assets have to be, you know, extremely, you know, user friendly. Number right. one, number two, extremely appealing right. to make people trust the brand. And the way I look at, you know, any new entity or any podcast at a high level, I look at it as step one, awareness. How many people are aware that your podcast even exists?
Right.
Step two, how engaged are they with exists. Your brand? Yeah. Right. So I get, you know, you're speaking to your audience. You know, I'm downstairs. I listen to a variety of different podcasts, and I mm-hmm. haven't heard of the Suspendables. Right.
Right.
Step two, the engagement aspect, how engaged are they with the brand? How engaged are they with the podcast? And you guys are doing a phenomenal job on the show. And right. again, thank you to the listeners for making that happen. And then step three, the acquisition, you know, how can we keep these people engaged? How can we turn them into a, you know, potential customer?
Right.
And, you know, further the opportunities with them as well.
Right. So we're going to grow it. Okay. This is day one that we're starting. How do we increase our listenership from what we have been doing to that, what we're missing out on? How are we going to grow the percentage? How are we going to get it up 5%, Eddie? And how freaking long is that going to take? Okay, we want action. Okay, we want action. All right, we're putting you under the gun, baby. Okay, give us something realistic here, Eddie.
The million dollar question.
Right.
So predictably, like what I'm foreseeing and what I'm forecasting is what I want. And as a goal, I want to increase your listenership by close to 7% weekly. So just doing some numbers, which, you know, you guys are, all due respect, you're not spending on any social media advertising. You know, there's right. the whole, I picked your brain about the Google advertising, some search engine optimization. You know, you get thousands of people searching Russ's name on Google.
Yeah.
How nice would it be the Suspendables to show up first, a podcast hosted by Russ Cortnell.
So are we going to go, are we going to go TikTok, YouTube, some other shit that we got
all that fun stuff all that fun stuff. So okay. Again, TikTok's such a new social media channel, and really just the way the algorithms work and all that neat stuff. There's such a big opportunity, especially with, you know, the people you guys have on your show.
Right. So is it fair to say, Eddie, when we're launching into this project with you, is it fair to say that you'll get to a certain stage in a podcast like ours? Okay. Fun content. People who do listen, they just love it. Is it fair to say that this is kind of a raw reality of an online business? Like you'd said to me, effectively, it's an online business, that the raw reality is step aside, you keep doing what you're doing, and now you need to have a company who knows how to jack the numbers.
Of course. Of course. And you know, I liked your question earlier, and you know, that's the biggest question every podcaster probably asks himself is, how can I monetize my podcast to make it ROI positive?
Right.
Right.
And return on investment. I got that ROI.
Yeah. Oh, that a boy, Jimmy. Yeah, baby.
There we go.
Ring the bell.
Do you know how many listeners we're going to get, Russ, when I tell them what ROI is? Okay. I'm killing myself. My God. Sorry, Eddie, go ahead. You know what you're up against. Go ahead.
And you know, that's really the biggest question they ask themselves. And you know, there's many different areas you guys can generate some revenue. One of them being affiliate marketing, where, you know, best example, let's say, I don't know if I'm allowed mentioning names here, but I'll just mention one. Pro Hockey Life has a new brand that they want to launch, or a new swag line they want to launch. Best example is, you know, majority of your guys' listeners, chances are, have played hockey or engaged with hockey. So it's a wicked audience to target, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure everyone who's listening to this podcast listens to other podcasts as well. And I'm sure they've all heard, you know, utilize promo code, example for you guys, Jungle 25, right?
It's a good code. So I like that.
Good, great code. So big opportunity there as well. And then of course there's the whole sponsorship and advertising aspect. Again, and it all comes down to you guys as listeners, right? How many people listen to the show weekly? And, you know, how can I get that audience and other brands like the Suspendables to advertise on my show?
Right on. So 7% increase, folks. Okay. You heard it here first. We're really, you know, like Russ and I said, and Russ is a little more brutally honest than I am. Right. We said, no problem. Give the kid a deadline. Give the kid a deadline. Give him something to work with. So this is a project that we launched into, Eddie, and we're going to get some growth. And we thought we would invite everyone into this. If you do need the services of a digital marketing company, you're my guy. Okay. Reach out to us and we'll hook you up with Eddie. Do it now, because I know you're going to be able to do this for us, Eddie. Will I be able to, just before you go, Eddie, and thanks for taking the time. Will I be able to dress up? I have an idea. Can I dress up like Russ and sort of move around a little bit? Can we do some videos if I'm Russ? Can that be our first thing?
Yeah, and we're talking about that Thursday. Oh, so, Russ, you're in for a good laugh, my friend, because Jim's got some wicked ideas.
Does he have it coming? If you've listened to this show, does Russ have it coming for me or what? So,
and I just left Canada, flew back to LA, so I can't come over to Edmonton and pound you. So you're lucky.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
So there we go, Rusty. We just thought we'd introduce Eddie. We're under this new project and, you know, to increase the show and get to the big time and stuff like that. So he gave us a little 7%, Rusty, a week, blah, blah, blah. In a year from now, we're looking at sort of triple our listenership.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Did you like pressure like that, Russ, when you were growing up, where someone said, if you don't do this concrete number, we're going to have trouble. We need so many assists from you. We need so many goals. Anything like that ever from a coach?
I used to put them on myself. I'd always set a goal before every season. And, you know, I monitored my own self. But obviously when you're not producing, you know, you should be, that's the pressure that sucks, because they start questioning your ability and you know, possible trade, or maybe get moved, demoted on your line, or when you were young and first starting out, get sent to the minors. I mean, that was the worst. Pressure.
Yeah. Anyway, Rusty, speaking of pressure, we saw it this week on a young Layla Fernandez, Canadian kid from Montreal, certainly province Quebec, I think Montreal. And you're a pro athlete, Russ. You were your whole life. You've always talked about the difference between being good or making the bigs is really how you handle pressure. You know, and we hear that a lot in golf. We hear it a lot in other sports. And tennis, we saw this Layla Fernandez, the Canadian kid, in her semifinal, not only be able to handle pressure, you know, it's seven rounds that you got to win. So she's into her sixth. And the girl she played, Sabalenka, was favored to beat her. And the final game, Sabalenka serving. And I've never seen, Russ, a bigger display of pressure crushing an athlete. I don't know if you saw it, but she was serving, which of course is an advantage in tennis. Mm-hmm. She could not get the ball over the net and double faulted her way out of the championship. Wow. And it was the most apparent thing I've ever seen, was suffering from pressure. And conversely, this other kid handling unbelievable pressure, Russ, to play. What did you think of all that?
Well, I didn't watch a lot of it. I watched bits and pieces. The place I was staying at didn't have a TV, so I didn't watch a lot of TV this summer, which doesn't bother me a bit. But really? No. Okay. And so I saw bits and pieces of her playing at a friend's house and then at the club, at Victoria Golf Club. And she was just phenomenal. I mean, we love Canadians. We love these underdog stories and especially in tennis and golf, where we do have some great players, but it's not consistently every year. And so, she's just a little ball of fire and cute as a button. And I mean, it looked like all the Americans were cheering her on too, and in the stands, anyways. And so it was fun. It was fun to talk about with some friends that had watched every single match, and they were filling me in, and I just loved the excitement around her.
Right. One of the tough things to bear when after she win each match was the post match interview from very qualified interviewers, and some of the stuff they asked her was, I thought was not unfair for her having to decide or have an opinion, but it was kind of like, what's this mean to you? The family, this chick's 18 or girl is 19 years old. And they're asking her stuff that is just like, oh my God, give her a break here. Just ask her about the match instead of, is this dreaming and how did you do it? How did you do this? And it, Naomi Osaka, who Fernandez beat, has pulled away from doing interviews, Russ, because she has claimed it's bringing her down and making her depressed and is not helping her mental health. You remember when that came out, you and I talked about it for a bit, and now it's looking like this has merit, what she was talking about. What's fair, Russ? What's fair to ask these people in interviews? What's taboo? What should they be asked? What shouldn't they be asked? What's your take on that, Russ?
Well, it's a tough question to answer, because we've always been taught you got to face the media, whether you have a good game or a bad game, and you got to sit up there and answer the questions. But when somebody is legitimately saying they're having mental health issues because of it, you would think as a society, we would go, okay, give this one a break. Give this person a break and let's watch her play tennis, because ultimately nobody sits there, opens up a beer, gets a ball, bowl of popcorn, and goes, okay, I can't wait for this interview. I mean, that's not what we want to see. We want to see athletes out there performing at their best and doing their best, playing the sport. And then the personal side of it is the interview after, how are you feeling? How do you do this? And that's cool. And, but I think most people would go, okay, if she doesn't do the interview do you still want to watch her play? And I think everybody would agree that we just want to watch her play.
Right. When you arrived in the NHL, Russ, you know, you talk about that being the, you know, the greatest, one of the greatest days of your life, family stuff being separate. But, you know, and when you came into the league, you quickly became a household name. Russ Courtnell was known, you know, for this blazing speed. You know, you played in the biggest markets in the NHL. Off you went, you know. Mm-hmm. You've spoken in the past, Russ, about you didn't know how big this would be and how much it would affect your life away from being normal, right? Yeah. As being it. This kid now, Russ, 18 years old, just turned 19. What's the downside here, Russ, if there is any, and what is she going to have to handle going forward now with an absolutely, certainly this week, life-altering performance?
Well, I think what we saw was that she can handle it, and I think for her it's just it's going to be a beautiful ride if she continues to, you know, 18 years old, she's going to get better, she's going to get stronger, she's going to get wiser. She's a kid still, and so I mean the road looks really really rosy for her, and hopefully, you know, there's no interruptions of you know, negative stuff, and she stays healthy and stays positive and stays true to herself.
Right.
And everything that she's learned from her parents and as a kid growing up, and she just takes all that positive energy and moves forward and just matures with it. And her work ethic and commitment to herself and her game improves every year, and she tries to you know, Sidney Crosby always says he tries to work on one thing to get better at every off season. I mean, that's one of the best hockey players in the last 15 years in the NHL, and he's trying to improve every summer in the off season. So I think if she takes that attitude, trying to get better and not being satisfied, then we're going to see lots of her.
If you were a teammate of Sid's, Sid Crosby's a great example. He's still playing. Ovi, you know, Ovechkin, these guys are, you know, Connor McDavid, younger. Right, the next generation kid coming along. If you're their manager, if you're their life coach, Russ, if you're their parent, if you're their mentor, what would you tell them, Russ, that they've got to be really, really cautious about going forward as a star athlete?
I think staying true to yourself and being humble. Boreas Salming said to me once, you know, the farther they climb, the longer the fall. And so when you just try to be yourself, and when people give you things, they're going to want something in return, and just be cautious of all that. You earn everything you get, but there's nothing you get is free. And I believe if you just be yourself and be true to who you are and how you were raised and stay humble. You know, Wayne Gretzky's a great example. Everywhere he goes, he's got lots of time for people. He's genuine. He's never changed. Mm-hmm. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful human being and greatest hockey player ever to play. So try to be like Wayne.
You played in that era, Russ, where there's so many great stories that, you know, the game was changing. The money was up. It was, you know, it became different than hockey in the 70s or 80s. Did you see any guys, Russ, who just got eaten up by it? We talked about pressure that when they did make it, that it was just too much for them to. I don't need names, but that it was just too much for them to handle.
There was definitely some guys, of kids that weren't ready for the pressure. Sometimes they were just too nice, and they got eaten up and pushed aside. But never saw a guy get so cocky and you know, flashing money or stuff. I never saw any of that. I saw some young, talented players come up, and they just, it's not that they didn't have the balls. They just were too kind. And I told my daughter, who's at USC, I said, you know what, when you're at practice, there's no friends on the field. They're your teammates, and you've got to be a great teammate but you've got to prove yourself every practice and be better than the person in front of you and the person behind you, and be tough on the field. And then off the field, you know, do that, do the friendly stuff. You don't have to be mean per se, but you've got to be tough, and you got to have this inner strength that yes, and you don't have to say anything, but your actions speak loud. And so, I try to tell my kids, just when you're out there, you're trying to impress the coaches so that you can play, and you've got to be better than the people in front and behind and stay there.
Right. Mentally tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you launched in, Russ, you met your wife, Paris, right when you were starting out as a hockey player?
No.
Little after?
Midway through my career, probably, or okay. Further.
You would know this is going to be a different life, you know, where you fall in love, you meet this wonderful girl, and then you, at some point, you got to say, I kind of need to explain to her what the life of a hockey player is all about. And even in your words, you know, not being derogatory, but it's kind of a selfish career just based on the makeup of it, you know, about how walk us through that, Russ. Did you have to have a conversation with Paris to say, look, now this is all great, but through the honeymoon, but here's what's going to happen.
I think I was the lucky one, because my wife grew up with a famous mom who was a jazz singer who traveled and had shows and had to go for sound check, and she had a 3-piece orchestra, and they traveled together. And so there was separation, you know, there was times when Paris didn't go on the road with her mom. And so for us, that part was easy. And then it's really hard as it's not as hard on a couple as it is when you start to have children. And then when you start a family, that's where the burden really falls on your wife, because we have afternoon naps, or at least, you know, when I played, we did from 1 till 4. So she's got to keep the baby or the kids quiet, or take them out of the house, or whatever, so that you can get your rest.
Right.
And then, you know, we're up, we play at night normally. So, you know, you're not around to see as much of the kids. When I've told this story to many people, that I retired with my daughter, Allie, when it was going into kindergarten, and Lawton was, you know, 2.5 or 3.
Right.
And so I'm going to start doing more stuff with the kids. So I love this restaurant in Santa Barbara. If you ever get to Santa Barbara, go for La Superica on Milpas Street. It is phenomenal. And I drive there once in a while just to have lunch. It's about an hour drive up, have lunch, walk around Montecito or Santa Barbara, and then come home. So I decide I'm going to take Lawton with me, just two of us, right? This is going to be great. Little bonding period. And so I get in my SUV, put him in the back seat, and in his baby seat, and I'm driving up. I'm listening to music, and he's so quiet. I think, oh, perfect. He fell asleep. So I'm riding up. Right. 20 minutes in, I look back, and he is staring at me like I've abducted him. He's like, who is this guy? He's looking at me like, where are we going? I spent a ton of time from when I retired. See, I didn't work till for 16 years after I retired. So I spent all this time coaching, watching, taking the kids to school and hanging out. And it was awesome, because then when I would leave, they would get sad when I'd pack up a suitcase to go somewhere to a charity event or something. And then when I come home, every time I'd come in the door, they would scream, "Daddy's home, Daddy's home." And we go out in the back. Living in California, it's like summer every day. So spent a lot of time in the backyard, throwing the ball around, kicking the soccer ball around. And anyways, that's the biggest thing, I think, for hockey players, is the change is when you start a family. That's a big, big commitment on both, but especially the spouse.
You know how highly accomplished I am, Russ. Okay.
Oh, my God.
The stuff I've done.
We don't have enough time to hear it all.
Yeah. Rusty, is it different for a kid growing up with a high peak performance athlete like yourself compared to me?
Well, I mean, I look at, do you have any more? Do you want to add to that?
Sorry, No, you're good.
But I look at Gretz's kids and I look at mine, and obviously he's the greatest player ever. And his kids went on to do great things in other sports. 4 out of 5 were mm-hmm. athletes, and they all picked something other than hockey, which I know Wayne was in favor of, and they all did great things. And Tristan's still trying to, you know, manage his way through golf. And my kids, I didn't think Lawton would play hockey because we were living in California. So I thought, I took some advice from Wayne. They're like, let's not put our kids in hockey. So I didn't. Then we moved to Canada, and he was 7 and he started playing hockey and he fell in love with it. But I think just the advice that I can give my kids is huge for what I've experienced in my career. And then also sitting with other parents, watching my girls play, like I've helped a lot of parents relax, like, cause it's just freaking out, especially these.
How'd you help them?
Well, like they just get so nervous. Their kids are going to make mistakes, and sitting on the sidelines, and some of the obnoxious parents, mostly the dads, but there were a few moms in there. I never really talked to them too much about it, but I did try to help some of the people around me. Just, you know, chill out. Your kid is good. Like, you're not helping by screaming, oh, my God, when your daughter's got the ball or she's got a forward coming down on her and she's a goaltender and she's, you know, we can hear our parents' screams and yells and laughter. So anyways, I tried to help them, but I think being honest with my kids and I never wanted to be that obnoxious parent. My parents weren't. And so just giving them, I think, great positive advice. And then if they needed a kick in the butt, I once got mad at my oldest daughter, and I was disappointed in the way she played. And I mean, I wasn't yelling at her, but I said, you know, what was wrong? You know, you didn't play, you didn't have the energy you normally have. And my wife whispers in my ear, she's probably 14 or 15, 14 at the time. She's having her period. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. And then I'm so sorry. Okay. I get it. You know, you're not feeling well. That's what I said. Right. But I just love watching my kids. I love watching them with their teammates. And so I enjoy every moment of it. And I try to give the advice that my parents gave me and then the good coaches that I've had and teammates and my experience and share them with them. And hopefully they appreciate it.
Yeah. You were into a whole new ground, you know, a whole new ball game here with your daughter, Allie, for example, and your son Lawton to a degree for sure. Allie has kind of reached this level of celebrity. There's no doubt about it. Right. Mm-hmm. With the Sports Illustrated issue that she's in. Mm-hmm. Her husband is a superstar NFL player.
Soon to be husband.
Soon to be husband. So they've got, you know, it's going to be a different life for them, you know, but Allie seems to be able to embrace it. Eric looks like one of the most fun, humble guys I've ever seen in my life.
He's great. Yeah. I'll give you an example. So Eric doesn't want to talk about football. He doesn't want to watch football. And that was kind of like me, and I totally understand it. I didn't watch a lot of hockey. I kind of wish I watched more when I was playing, just to watch what other guys were doing. But I can totally relate, and I respect that when we're with Eric, we just, unless he brings it up, we're not talking football. I sent him a text this morning. I waited because they lost yesterday. And tough, I just said, hey, congratulations on your 13 tackles. And sorry, you know, you guys didn't win in the comeback, because they came back and tied the game and then lost it in overtime. And, you know, the last thing he wants to hear is some, you know, me say something or his family say something. And I just try to encourage And that's right. All I try to pick out the positives and that's it.
You know, that's obviously great advice to your parent. I've got to think back to my dad, who, when I went on my first job interview and then I got to use this tactic, he told me in an interview, and I got to use it and then pass it on to my kids, and it worked. It doesn't sound like it's going to work, but it did. And what he told me to do, so I was applying for a job at Molson and I got granted an interview. I was living in Ottawa. The job was out here in Edmonton, and I was flying out there to have this interview with a huge company. Mm-hmm. And my dad said, what are you going to do in the interview? Right. I'm 23. Right.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. But if I don't know that, if I'm not sure what they asked me, I'll try and make something up, I guess. Right. He goes, no, we're not doing that. Here's what you're going to do. And I guarantee you, you'll get the job. Whatever question they ask you, okay, whether you know the answer or not, you're going to say this: I'm not sure, but I'll find out. I'll come in early. I'll stay late, and I'll answer all my messages.
Nice.
And I said, okay. And he said, you're going to answer that for anything they ask you, even if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so the guy's like, what are your hobbies? You know? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'll find out.
Oh God.
Anyway, it was kind of goofy. But I got the job.
I know how you could have got the job like in 2 seconds. Just tell them, phone this bar I hang out at and ask
Molson.
How many beers does Jimmy Jerome drink a night?
And buy. And I was a big buyer too. Yeah. I had an expense account.
Yeah, they needed you in Edmonton.
They did. Anyway, great stuff. Talking about kids and what a life it's going to be for this kid, Layla, and all these other young athletes. And
Exciting times for them. I was in the Whitworth box last night at the LA Rams game, and Melissa, her four kids, and tears were flowing. She's so emotional. And then I look over to the right, two boxes over is Aaron Donald's dad, number 99, wearing his jersey with his mom.
Nice.
And it's like he played every single play of the game. I was watching him more than the game. And I just loved it. And a couple times I got emotional. I was just like, this is so freaking cool. This player does. I doubt he knows what his parents are doing because he's so focused on the game.
Sure, sure.
And then, a couple boxes over from there was another player's family. They're making so much money, they're buying their own boxes.
Right.
And sweet. But it just watching parents. So back to this kid from Montreal. I can only imagine her parents and the emotion they're going through and how exciting it is for them, because we know as parents of athletes watching our kids grow up and then they get to a level of success, an elite level, and they're making, some of these athletes are making incredible amounts of money, but they're still parents just cheering on their kids. I mean, it was freaking awesome watching Aaron Donald's dad.
Right.
He looked like a player. Like you could tell he's probably was some sort of athlete. And it was just, he stood up. He sat down towards the end a little bit. He must have been exhausted from the game he just played.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. Speaking of pressure, I like, watching the U.S. Open this week, some of those parents were not there. I think Layla's father cannot stand watching because he just gets overcome with pressure. And so he doesn't go to the games. And I kind of understand that. Even watching my kid, he was a good basketball player. He was on a senior team in high school. Even that, I've just found it too much, so I couldn't watch.
Wow.
Question for you, Russ. Outside of hockey players and family, who are your most influential people? Two or three. No family, no hockey players. And you got to leave me out of it, Russ. I understand. I'm a very influential guy.
Wow. Barry Robbins.
Who's that?
He's my seventh grade math teacher.
No way.
And coach.
Yep.
Yeah, probably and I just spent the entire summer with him. If I wasn't cooking for my brother Bruce and his wife Victoria, I was over at his house cooking, hanging out with him.
Right.
My best friend since kindergarten, Leonard Carson. from Victoria.
Right. Cool.
And then the third, who I haven't talked to in a long time, but Barry McKenzie, my my coach from Notre Dame.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Sure, so sure, those three are probably, without mentioning, you know, Gretzky and all the, and
right,
my family and stuff, those three people are super important to me.
No, you answered it. Yeah. Someone wants to know the federal election here in Edmonton. In my town, there's I don't know why they do this. So we're into an election right now, federally. There's mm-hmm. also a mayoral election here at the same time. So mm-hmm. Lawns have, you know, 90 signs on them. someone says, if I'm not mistaken, did I hear and during one of your shows that Russ was asked to run as a member of parliament one time?
Yeah, for when I was living in Victoria, in Oak Bay, I was asked to run for the Conservative Party.
Yeah.
And that's when Stephen Harper called my house to talk to me about it. And I was cutting the lawn and Paris, you know, Stephen Harper called, very official.
Hello, Prime Minister.
Yeah. 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 Hello, this is Stephen Harper calling. Could I speak to Mr. Russ Courtnell? And she goes, she's American, so she didn't know who he was. And she says, and we just moved there from LA. And she says, okay, Mr. Stephen Harper, I'll find Mr. Courtnell. And she comes out and she's cupped the phone and she goes, oh, it's Mr. Harper, like this, you know? And I went, I had the look on my face and she went, oh no, what did I do?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's the prime minister. Yeah.
Biggest leader in the country.
Yeah. 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 And so she was so embarrassed. And then, these guys came over and we had meetings at my house and
so you considered it.
Yeah, but right the time, but the time to, if you win, the time spent away from my family would have been incredible. It would have been in Ottawa and I was just starting to coach my son in hockey and
right.
We just moved to Victoria and he was funny because I was asking him how much time I had to be in Ottawa if I won. And he was like, what do you mean? He goes, well, I said, I want to coach. He goes, so you want to be in your riding, working with your constituents, not trying to be in Ottawa, taking my job? Because most politicians want sure. my job, right?
Sure.
And he goes, well, the minimum amount of time I think you have to be there is like 32 to 35 weeks a year. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyways, we had this great conversation. Our boys are the same age. And yes, I was asked to run. And there was I was on the front page of the Toronto Sun, and it said, Russ Courtnell, right winger, considering a run. Front page. Yeah, it was front page news. Yeah,
good one. Well, as everyone knows, I'm the son of a federal politician. And the family thing was what stopped my dad from, he was kind of a dark horse as a leader of the Liberal Party. You know, uh-huh. at the time, and he got approached about it. And his answer to it was no. Kind of an interesting answer was, he said, I can't do that. I can't be the leader of a political party because I don't hate the other guy that much.
Mm, right.
And his point was you got to kind of hate the other guy.
He probably would have been great then because then he would have made things happen working with the other party.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And anyway, the only way he did it was we moved to Ottawa.
Yeah. Because you know, got to get up there and just rip the other person apart.
Yeah. No fun. Yeah. No fun. Rusty, before we go, good show. You know, it's 20 years ago. I think we're obligated, like a lot of people this week, to recognize the absolute piercing memory that everyone has and the atrocity that happened in 9/11.
Yeah.
September 11, 2001. I thought the sports world, as you and I are, you know, deeply entrenched in, I thought they did a wonderful job with recognizing it. They always have every year. I remember where I was, Rusty. I was doing a radio show in Ottawa. It was 8:45. We get off air at 9:00 and our producer came running in and said, look up at the monitors. You know, you always had television on, even, you know, in the studio. And that was the start of seeing that hole in the side of the World Trade Center. And then,
It's brutal. You
know, brutal. I remember where I was. And I remember the feeling of, as this was trying to sink in, of fearing for my life. I lived in Ottawa. I lived, that station was about 2 blocks from the U.S. Embassy, a big giant embassy that they'd just built. It was another few blocks to the House of Commons, to the Parliament buildings. I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I've got many, many sort of, you know, examples of what I was thinking of that week. But I don't live in the States, Russ. You do. Can you talk about that, Russ?
We were, we actually, Paris and I were in bed, and our friend called and woke us up.
Because that's 6 in the morning for you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and she said, you got to turn on the TV. And we Paris and I laid in bed and watched this, her, like, cried and, you know, held each other, and it was awful. And our friend, Ace Bailey, was on one of the planes.
Oh, God.
We found out that day or the next day, they started releasing the names on the ticker below, right, all the people who had died. And so I was just in shock that Ace had was on the plane. He was going to training camp. I soon after, remember, we didn't fly for a while, and I went to Boston for a fundraiser for Cam Neely. And, it was the first time I flew, and it was really eerie in the airport, just looking at everybody who got on the plane, came in the airport. Like, you couldn't help yourself. You're just wondering if somebody was there to do damage and kill people. And it was an awful feeling for a long period of time. And then a sense of, you know, the country came together for a while, and I thought, Bush's speech was great. I thought that pitch he threw out at the Yankee game was awesome. The place went crazy, and there was
mess with the fireman's hat on.
Yeah.
Remember standing for the anthem was
it. Yeah. And 20 years ago, and there was this terrible tragedy that, you know, affected the world and really affected the United States and pulled us together. And then look where we are right now. And in the last, you know, 5 years in the United States, just pulling apart. It's just terrible. So I, you know, I'll never forget. I had a friend at Sherwood Country Club here, was on the phone with his financial office. 237 people all died.
Ugh.
Yeah. And he was on the phone when it happened because he's the stockbroker. So he was awake because the market opens up early here.
Yeah,
and he was talking to somebody in the office, and all of them, every single one of them died. So he was a freaking mess. I mean, I used to come into the locker room, and he'd be just absolutely hammered, 10 o'clock in the morning, just sitting there, just shaking his head, crying, you know, didn't know what to do. And he was a mess. And then he moved, and I haven't heard from him since. But
you know,
witnessed his sadness. You know, every time I saw him, it was horrible.
Yeah, you know how affected you only know yourself how affected you were by it. I know how I was gravely affected by it. Memory fades a little bit now of the exact moments of it, but I can only imagine, you know, spouses and mm-hmm. children of victims,
yeah.
know, who died. Yeah. You know, you think you're affected by it.
Yeah.
There's 3 or 4 specials this week that are out there, heart-wrenching, with mm-hmm. phone calls that people made from the plane. Flight 93, there was a bunch of phone calls and interviews with children and spouses of yeah. people who were lost. So
yeah,
I think we owe it to them to recognize that. God bless America and God bless the human race, you know, and for what happened. Horrible, yeah. horrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, 20 years ago today. So, Rusty... what's up for the rest of the week, man? What do you've moved back to LA?
Yeah. So I came back.
What's happening?
3 months.
You get fired?
No. I, you know, the season's almost over there. So, we got a couple more tours, and my brother Bruce can handle it on yep. his own. So, I came back, and, you know, I'll be here till probably next June, and then, head back up there for next summer and, get rolling again.
So what are you going to do now in that shit-ass weather in Southern California?
The shitty thing is that Sherwood's closed for 2 weeks for frickin' maintenance. So I was all excited to come and play. My son's going to camp on October 10th. So I'll be hanging out with him. And we're looking forward to enjoying golf. And then I get this email, no golf for 2 weeks here at Sherwood. So.
How are you possibly going to get through the next 10 weeks? I know how you're getting away, folks. Listen to the Suspendables. We do it each and every week. Welcome aboard our relaunch. We're going after it, man. We're gonna make the baby grow. So thank you all for listening and continue to listen. And Rusty, thank you, man. Have yourself a good week, and we'll be back next week with another episode of what, Russ?
The Suspendables.
That was okay. Talk to you later, everybody. See you, Russ.
See ya.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.